Today we're in lesson 14. We'll be in Ecclesiastes 7, verses 1 through 14. Here he begins a series of lessons on practical wisdom. It really goes from chapter 7, verse 1 to chapter 9, verse 12. In our verses for today, he's going to contrast wisdom and folly. So let's dive right in. Verses 1 through 4. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter. For by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. This sounds more like Proverbs than Ecclesiastes. But at the end of Ecclesiastes 6, the preacher was in a mournful, discouraged mood as he considered the meaninglessness of life in a world without eternity and accountability in the world beyond. He continues his tone by coupling an obvious truth. A good name is better than precious ointment. With a more startling statement, the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. Spurgeon says here, consider it spiritually, dear brethren, what is a good name? A good name is a name that's written in the Lamb's Book of Life, and that's better than the sweetest of all ointments. Boy, isn't that the truth? And in verse 2, Solomon knew our tendency to simply ignore or wish away death. It's better to be squarely confronted with the reality of death, and the house of mourning is a fine place to take it to heart. This comes from the deep and pained sense of meaninglessness that the preacher suffered under. It made him feel that death was better than life. From a New Testament perspective, we have mixed feelings about the preacher's outburst. A day of death is better than the day of one's birth. On the one hand, the day of death is glorious for the believer. Our battle is over, our sorrow is over, our uncertainty is over, and all things are new. On the other hand, we rejoice in the meaning God has given us with this life on earth. We agree with the Apostle Paul when he says in Philippians 1, verse 23, "For I'm hard-pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better." Death is the end of dying. On the day of the believer's death, dying is forever done with. The saints who are with God shall never die anymore. Life is wrestling, struggling, but death is the end of conflict. It is rest victory. This is what Spurgeon says concerning this verse. When the preacher says sorrow is better than laughter, he goes against all intuition. I mean, really, who among us would say this? Rejecting Solomon's general premise, we do not believe that sorrow is always better than laughter. We reject it out of firm confidence in a God to whom we answer in eternity and who has promised to reward good and punish evil there. Even so, there's often more wisdom in the house of mourning than in the house of mirth. When men consider their own mortality, especially if God is brought into the picture, and what will be said about them when they die, they have to consider this. Verses 5 through 9 now, he continues to contrast wisdom and folly. Verse 5, he says, "It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This is also vanity." Here, the crackling of thorns under a pot, this would be a fire. The thorns are used for the fire, but it burns hot, makes this noise, but the fire doesn't last long. So it's just like the laughter of a fool. That doesn't last long either. In verse 7, he says, "Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools." Well, the preacher continues his previous thought that man finds wisdom in adversity and suffering more than in ease and comfort. The laughter of the fool is nothing more than a momentary sound, leaving nothing of substance behind. When Solomon says, "Surely oppression destroys a man's reason," he understood that for all of his praise of the instructive role of adversity, suffering also had its limit. It could destroy a wise man's reason. And when he says, "Do not hasten your spirit to be angry," this comes after, in the same verse, in verse 8, after two proverbs celebrating patience, he then warns against impatience leading to anger. Living with an under-the-sun premise may easily make a person impatient and then angry, and anger rests in the bosom of fools. Now verses 10 through 12. Do not say, "Why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense, but the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it." Here we have really essentially in a nutshell the fact that wisdom gives perspective. Solomon understood our tendency to romanticize the past and think that it was better than our current time. He cautioned against it, knowing that the meaninglessness of life with his under the sun premise is not a new phenomenon. With the preacher's premise, the best kind of life is found with wisdom and money or an inheritance. This wisdom, also called in the same verse, excellence of knowledge, gives a person whatever life can be had in an under-the-sun world. Then in verses 13 through 14, he says, "Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider, surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him." Well, there is wisdom in considering God. Now remember, he's considering God, but still in an under-the-sun view. Understanding the relative place of man to God is important in peaceful acceptance with this view, acceptance of life with this view. Solomon counsels us how to take the good and the bad of life into perspective. Take what life gives you and get along the best you can. But then again, when he says, "Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him," he drifts again into a kind of despair. Considering God's control of all things leads him to believe that the system is set so that we can know nothing of what is beyond us, of what will come after him. There is a sense of fatalism again here. So we continue to be in a section concerning wisdom under the sun. As we close, it would be appropriate, I think, for us to remember that wisdom literature of the Old Testament consists of Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes, as well as some of the Psalms. Solomon's two books are such a contrast. Proverbs provides wise sayings and observations designed to develop proper attitudes and godly behavior. You see, but God is in the picture and is the very beginning and basis for wisdom. In Ecclesiastes, we have an under-the-sun wisdom, you know, from that human perspective that shows the emptiness of life without God and eternity in the picture. It makes a person wonder at what point in Solomon's life he really did write each book. In closing, what wisdom from Ecclesiastes has the Holy Spirit impressed on your heart concerning life with or without God? And maybe take some time to pray about its application. You can find the notes for this study at naomistable.com.